Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Terror is like a lightning bolt, in that it's impossible to accurately predict the moment that it will strike. But it's also like thunder. You've seen the startling flash in the sky, and now you know what's coming. And despite your best efforts to prepare, it shakes you to the core when it arrives. It's at times like that that our animal instincts threaten to override our common sense and send us scattering into the darkness. Our campaign is Horror on the Orient Express, and this is episode 62. I am your game master, and Jeff Wilkins will be giving the recap. I'm curious to see how the character is going to do in this one, but the players are ready, so let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff?
Thanks, Tom. Our investigators are in a small town called Orsach, outside of Belgrade. We're preparing to head off into the woods to visit grandmother's house in search of another piece of the Sedevkar statue. We're told it's about a two-hour walk. As we're walking, Dr. Keith is playing on her newly acquired ocarina whistle. We think there is an odd moment where she blows into the whistle, and it seems as if the trees are shaking or vibrating. It's odd, but we continue forward. We eventually find the small house and proceed to knock when a woman's voice asks us to come in. It's the older woman's granddaughter named Sertza. She seems in a friendly mood and is in the middle of making bread. She invites us to wait until grandmother returns. We make small talk and tell Sertza why we're here. She tells us we can look around at the statuary pieces if we want. It's not long after that finally grandmother shows up. We introduce ourselves and explain why we are here and what we're looking for. Dr. Dawkins shows the older woman the arm piece that we've already found. She's amazed at it. She pauses and then says she thinks she has a piece that does look like it, but she's not sure where inside the house it is. After some searching, it looks like we see the piece up high on the top shelf. We determine that Dr. Keith is the only one who has not touched one of the pieces yet to be inflicted by the strange ailments, so she volunteers to share the burden. Since it's up high, it means she must step on a chair and then stand on the counter to reach it. Frank and Eldritch are standing by to assist if we can. Just as Dr. Keith grabs the arm, all hell breaks loose. In a flash, the old woman uses a wooden peel for baking, slides it under Dr. Keith, and with an amazing display of strength, tries to hurl Dr. Keith into the oven, which is now opened up as if it were a giant flaming mouth. At the same time, Sertza has taken a large knife and has swung it at Dr. Dawkins and Frank. Sertza is also chanting something in a foreign tongue. Eldritch hears the name Shub-Niggurath mentioned. It's as if the entire house has come alive. There are mouths everywhere and tentacles. In the midst of us fighting the old lady and Sertza, Dr. Keith gets the idea to blow the whistle really loudly. After a moment of a shrill sound, the house shudders and spits us all out onto the ground. In the process, the ocarina is also shattered. The house is alive. It's got large tentacles coming out from the top. It's standing on what look like large chicken legs. The house is dancing around. While Baba Yaga is trying to calm the creature, it accidentally steps on Baba Yaga. It doesn't kill her because we look back and we see the old lady hold her arm out and cast some sort of a spell on Sertza. Sertza shrivels and it looks like Baba Yaga has regained her health. At this stage, we all have decided to run into the woods. We're not even sure which direction to go in, but we run to escape anyway. On a last look back, we see black filaments rising from the ground, and all of the plant life in the trees and the bushes are beginning to turn black and disintegrate. We continue to run blindly into the woods. That brings us up to date.
Okay. So the first thing that we need to do is I need you to roll for sanity, pass or fail.
Oh, I have passed. And
I have failed.
Rupert has failed by 1 point.
I have passed.
Yeah.
Okay. If you passed, 1d4 plus 2.
Flipping out.
And if we fail?
I'll get to you in a second. Tell me what scores you got.
Oh, no. I got 6.
Okay. What'd you get, Thomas?
4.
Okay. If you failed, 1d8 plus 2.
Oh, crikey. Sorry, Simon.
Oh, wow. Oh. That's 3 points.
5.
Like you, also 3. 1.
Rupert did slightly better than I did. I don't know.
What did Rupert get?
He got... Sorry, you said 1d8 plus what, was it?
Plus 2.
Plus 2. He got 5.
Okay. Mick and Rupert have just run screaming off into the woods. Okay. The rest of you have fled in panic, but you've kind of managed to stay together. Okay. I didn't mean Mick. I meant Elizabeth screams and runs off into the woods. You're too gripped by self-preservation at this point to really care about anyone else. You find yourself wandering, actually panicking. You're fleeing. You're running through the woods. I would like... I would like you to do a 1d8 roll and tell me what scores you get.
For both of us, or just one?
Just for each of you.
For each of us, okay.
I got a 2.
Elizabeth gets a 1. And, oh dear, and Rupert gets an 8.
It's an 8. Jeff?
I went from a 1 to an 8.
Got an 8. And Thomas, what'd you get?
I also got a 2.
Got a 2. All right. Somehow, some way, you've all, well, you're not really in your rational minds at the moment. You've seen something that almost defies comprehension. It's terrifying. You've panicked, you've run into the woods, and after nearly, I'm going to go down the line, after nearly an hour, Dr. Elizabeth, you don't know how you got there, but you find yourself crouching underneath a bush in the middle of the forest. You don't know which direction you ran or how you got there or anything, but you're slowly coming to your senses and realizing that you're completely lost in the woods. Frank, you go for about 30 minutes, not as long as, before you start to come to your senses. And when you do, when you finally realize where you are, you have climbed up into a tree. And you're grabbing a hold of the trunk. Fortunately, you didn't climb up into a giant creature, but you climbed up into a tree. Dr. Dawkins, 30 minutes also has passed, and you find yourself coming to your senses after you have tried to squeeze yourself into a hollow tree, an old broken down hollow tree. You've thought, this is the best way to hide. There's no way that thing can find me. It'll just think I'm another tree. You're in there. Thomas, it's taken you about 40 minutes or so. to come to your senses, and you also find yourself jammed into a broken down log that's lying on the ground that you managed to squeeze yourself into, hoping that there's not a bear inside. But
great minds think alike.
Yeah, and similar, you think you're camouflaged. Rupert also climbed up a tree, and he's taken about 45 minutes or so to come to. But you are all separated. You don't know where you are. You don't know how you've gotten there. The forest is very dark and gloomy. There's snow in places, and you don't really know which direction that you've gone. So unless you have something you'd like to do, I assume you're going to wander around, try to find your way out.
Can we use pre-existing Boy Scout knowledge?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to ask much the same thing, given that Rupert's a former military man.
We will call it tracking.
Okay. Yeah.
Or navigation.
What is my navigation? That's all right.
I should also point out one more roll I forgot. 1d6 for each of you.
6.
Oh, I did that wrong. It's not 1d6. It's an intelligence roll.
Oh.
And I want to know. I want to know pass, fail. I want to know normal.
I got a 09. So I got a 9 out of 80.
I got a 50. My intelligence is a 70. I passed.
Oh dear. Elizabeth got a 98 out of 80. Okay.
So let's go down the line. Elizabeth, you failed in the extreme. Okay. You find yourself in that, as I say, you find yourself hiding under that bush. You're in the woods, and you're not even sure how you got into the woods. The last thing that you can remember is being in Orishach last night and seeing that ritual that the gypsies did, but you don't remember going to bed, and you don't remember getting up, and you don't remember how you got out here in the middle of nowhere. Okay.
Rupert got 57 out of 70.
Okay. Frank, how did you do?
49 is a regular success.
So a regular pass?
Yeah.
All right. You also seem to have a gap in your memory, but what you can remember is you remember going through the woods, you remember getting to the little cottage, and there was a girl inside who was working on a loom, and that's about the last thing that you can remember. You can remember that her name was Sirtza.
Just to clarify then, I'm basically in the middle of the woods with no idea how I got there, but I'm clutching the arm we were looking for.
Right. Yeah, you're clueless at this point.
Oh, that's going to freak me out.
That's not unsettling at all, is it?
Now, as a general rule, if anyone in the group mentions anything that happened, your memory will start to return. So, okay. All right, Dr. Dawkins, how did you do?
I got an 09 out of 80.
Okay, you remember everything, clear as a bell, and you're shaking and you're all alone in the woods. Your friends, for all you know, your friends could have been eaten by whatever that thing was. Thomas.
Yes, I got a 50 out of 70.
Is that a regular pass? It's regular. Okay, that's just regular. So, similar to Frank, you can remember finding a little hut, and there was a girl there, and her name was Sirtza. But you don't remember seeing anyone else. You remember you were going to see Grandma, but you don't remember seeing Grandma.
Okay, so it would be the same for Rupert then as well.
Okay. All right, so that's the state of your mind. It doesn't really matter for Rupert because this is for you to play, you know, when you do it. So, all right. Now I would like you to all do a D6.
Jeez Louise.
I told you there would be a lot of rolls at the very beginning.
Four.
I got a six.
Two for me. And also two for Rupert.
Jeff?
Six.
All right. All right. After about an hour, Elizabeth, completely clueless as to where you are, you're wandering, and you sort of get the feeling that there's less trees in that direction, and so you're going to head that way. And after about an hour's wandering, you find yourself coming out through into a clearing, and there is a semi-permanent gypsy village that has been set up, and there are people wandering around, lighting campfires, getting things ready for the evening. You also realize that you've been injured, you're scraped and scratched up, but you're fairly in good condition. It's just you look like you've been through what you've been through. So you're wandering out towards the...
Do I recognize anyone from that festival I was at?
Not at first. There's a lot of them. They've been here for a while, so there's... But you do remember that there was a Marco who was in charge of everything, and that there was a Luminica, who was the wise woman. So, what would you like to do? They haven't noticed you yet.
I'm not really in a fit state of mind to stand on ceremony. I'm just going to head towards the nearest campfire.
All right.
A source of warmth and safety, and I would like to be next to it.
After just a few moments, somebody notices you. A woman notices you, and she sort of gives a gasp. And a few of the others see you, and their initial reaction to you is you're like a ghost coming out of the woods. So they're wary, but I mean they're keeping their distance from you as you're coming towards them, but they're not like running or anything like that. So what would you like to try to do?
I'll hold my hand up in the universal gesture of I come in peace.
And they say something to you, but you don't understand it.
I'll just sort of, with my free hand, I'll gesture at the fire and a log or chair or...
They can see that you've been injured, that you've been scratched up. It takes them a few minutes to get used to the idea that a stranger has just walked out of the woods, but they eventually sort of help you, and they set you down, and they bring you some water to drink. And they're speaking to you in a language that you don't understand. Do you speak any other languages?
I speak Latin.
Oh, that's not going to help. Although Romani.
No, it's not. Nah, it's rooted in a Punjabi dialect. It's because they're from the Punjab originally.
All right, so that's what's happened. You're there. So you're just, are you going to try, what are you going to try to convey to them at least?
I'm just going to point, back at the woods and just look absolutely bemused. I don't know how I got here. I mean, I don't know what to say to them. Okay. Other than, English, anyone speak English?
English. There's a sort of a few minutes of people running around, and after a while, there's a young man who's brought over, and he's like, I speak little English.
Who my are friends, you? I am Elizabeth, Dr. Elizabeth Keith.
You are doctor, yes?
Doctor, yes, yes. I was in the woods with my friends. We got separated.
You are here alone?
I don't know. I don't really know how I got here. I would expect that I was with my friends because I usually am. But all I remember was that last night I was in Orishach. And now I'm here. I don't know how I got here or what's happened to me.
There's an older woman standing nearby, and she says something to him in their language, and he says, "You were at ceremony last night."
Yes, yes, ceremony. Yes.
She recognizes you. Where are your friends?
I don't know. I think perhaps they might be in the woods, or they might still be in Orishach. I really couldn't say.
And he yells some things to some other people, and you can see that they look like they're maybe going to get together a searching party to go look in the woods before it gets too dark. 10 minutes or so go by, and you hear some commotion in the village. And after a few minutes, they bring Rupert over. They found Rupert. Rupert almost, he wandered into the village too, but over there.
Oh, good God.
And let's see, Rupert. What did Rupert roll?
He also rolled a 2.
Yes, and as 2 was for that. How did he do on his intelligence roll?
He got 57 out of 70.
So he passed. So
regular pass, yeah.
Okay. He can remember going to the hut. And he can remember Tsirtsa. And now they're all very confused because something has happened to you in the woods, and your friends are still out there, because Rupert can definitely remember the others being with him. So they organize a bit of a searching party. And which one was that? After about 4 hours, they managed to recover Eldridge and bring him back. And of course, he can speak the language.
Okay.
But they haven't been able to find anyone else yet.
Oh, my goodness. I approach... who would be the authority figure here?
Marco.
Okay, so I approach Marco, and in Russian, I say, what has the doctor told you? And I point to Dr. Keith.
Well, she's explained that you were going into the woods to see the old lady, and that something has happened to you, and you can't remember what you have done or how you got lost.
No. I remember going there and seeing a young woman, but that was about it.
I'd like you to do, Eldritch, I'd like you to do a spot hidden roll.
Yes, sir. That is a pass. I got an 18.
All right. As you're standing there, talking to Marco, and there's people who've, it's interesting because some people have gathered around to see what's going on. Others have just sort of indifferently gone back to whatever they were doing. But there's always this kind of calm indifference. Nobody's really panicking or upset. They're just curious. Yeah. You're looking over, you suddenly look over Marco's shoulder as you say that. And you're pretty sure that Tsirtsa is standing right over there in the group of people.
Can I do maybe an intelligence roll?
Sure.
I don't want to just call her out for no reason.
Sure.
Okay, that is a 35 out of 70.
Okay, the woman you're looking at looks like Tsirtsa, but older, a little older. She doesn't look like she's 19. She looks like she's in her late 20s, maybe, but she's the spitting image of Tsirtsa.
I point to the young, to the older woman, and I say, the young lady in the hut looked like her.
And she turns around and he says, like her.
Like her.
He's like, come here, like this. And she comes over, and he tells her what you're saying. Well, she understands some of it because you're speaking Russian. He says, how did she look?
19. She was on a loom in a hut. She said her grandmother was out, but that's really all I remember.
The same hair, the same looks in her face?
Almost spitting image. The wrinkles give it away because she's older, but that's it.
What was her name?
Her name was Tsirtsa. I thought I said that. Her name was Tsirtsa.
Well, she didn't hear it, but as soon as you say the name, she almost drops to her knees. And she begins just talking excitedly and sobbing at the same time. She says that her twin sister went missing into the woods when they were 12.
Well, that's not possible. This woman was very, very young. Very young.
But you say that this... What do you remember after that? Do you remember anything that happened?
And I kind of look down and I take off my glasses and I try and fix them, like rub them with my shirt. And I'm going to try, can I try and remember, like force myself to try and like think?
Sure.
Okay.
Do an intelligence.
I just dropped my die.
Well, then that's a penalty.
41. It's not exactly a hard. Can I push it to be, not push it, but can I spend luck points to make it a hard?
It doesn't matter. You passed.
Okay.
I would like, let's see. What was the, you remember the loom?
I kind of role played that. I suspect I remember everything but the old lady.
Well, I'm going to move you up to the next level, which is do remember the old lady coming, and you do remember looking for the arm.
Okay, so then I say, I remember the grandmother. Not very many teeth. Very, very old.
Yes, we know the old woman.
Do.
And they don't look surprised at this, but they're listening.
Yes, but this young woman was with her.
We have long suspected that there is dark magic out there in the woods. It is part of our belief system, you understand.
Yeah.
What happened after that, do you remember?
I remember we were looking for an artifact. Do I remember Dr. Keith grabbing the artifact?
No. You remember she was going to climb up
something
onto a cabinet, but you don't remember what happened after that.
All right. I point to Dr. Keith and I say, she climbed up to get something. We were looking around. And can I roll another intelligence?
Not quite. By now, there's more commotion in the town, and they have found both Dr. Dawkins and Frank. And they're bringing them over to you. They look like they've been really cut up and scratched up and stuff.
I immediately rush over to them, and I kind of take them from the men who are escorting them, and I say in English, "Are you two all right?"
Frank's doing better than the Dr. Dawkins is. Dr. Dawkins is visibly shaking, and he's jumping. Anything that makes a noise or moves past him, he jumps like something's coming at him.
I look at Dr. Dawkins and I say, "What happened? What happened to you?" And I look at Frank and I say, "Why were we in the forest? What happened?"
Well, since I remember everything, I'll pretty much go over everything that I remember. From the time that we left, that we fled from the house, I'll explain to them what the house turned into. I'll explain everything that happened. And then I'll look over, I guess while I'm talking, I'm going to be looking around my environment. And I'll see this young lady that... It looks like Sasha.
Sertza.
Or Sertza. Yeah. Sorry. And I guess I'm going to flinch since I'm in a flinchy mood.
Right.
Like, what the hell is she still doing alive?
As you're conveying the story to them, you almost expect them to react with surprise, but there's kind of a calm... That sort of gypsy calmness that, yeah, well, we kind of expected that something was going on. And Marco, as soon as it seems to be confirmed that there was a monster, there's some mumbling amongst the gypsies. And Marco says, "We have long, long suspected this, but we could not prove it. If what you are saying is true, if you think that this was in fact the Baba Yaga of old, then this is very bad. But if she in fact stole one of our people, the sister, the Tsurtsa, as you say, and it was somehow keeping her young, which would be within the magic of these dark, dark creatures, then I demand that we have revenge on these people, these things that are in our woods." And he explains that long ago, the woods were far, far more dangerous. There were things in the woods that could kill a man and take his soul, and people went missing all the time. And over time, we organized, if you would call them, hunting parties. And we went out into the woods, and if we found one of these creatures, then we killed it, we destroyed it. But what you are talking about, you are not talking about one of these creatures that we know. You are talking about a brood mother, something that wants to produce more of them, which would make Baba Yaga and the other girl high priestesses of this thing. We do not speak its name, but it has been part of our beliefs for a long time. If we refer to it at all, we refer to it as the black goat of the woods. And if you guys want to do a Cthulhu mythos.
Since I already passed the Shub-Niggurath, would I know?
Yeah.
And I mutter under my breath, come out of Shub-Niggurath.
And when you do that, he immediately makes a sign at you and says, do not speak that name out loud, please. To invoke that name is to call the beast.
Rupert failed, but I got a 4.
Hooray!
By now it's all coming back to you, what happened. Dr. Elizabeth, you've also managed to keep the arm concealed, by the way.
Okie dokie. Up my sleeve, probably. That would be an appropriate place, wouldn't it? For an arm.
Why does she have 3 arms?
I'm from Gloucestershire. We've all got 3 arms.
Plus, Dr. Dawkins has the other arm, doesn't he? Yes.
Yes.
All right. So, at this point, it's a little close. Marco wants to organize a hunting party. He says, if the intention of these priestesses was to feed you to the thing, then the thing has weakened power and it needs sustenance. So we need to hunt it down and kill it if we can.
Are you referring to Baba Yaga's home? Because I thought that was a part of the myth. It's house moved.
As is usual, mythology and reality have a basis in one another, but I do believe we should go to the site that you found it and see if we can track it. It won't be easy. It never is easy.
Well, I look to Dr. Keith and say, you have that math. We have the math. We have a map that we use to take up a path to the house. Do you still have it?
Yes. We have the map that Nedic drew.
And I say, here, this is the map that the village gave us. Perhaps it can help us track down this creature.
He looks at it, and yes, I think that we can at least get back to where it was. I'll ask, what do you guys want to do?
I agree. If they want to give me a gun or some kind of melee weapon, because I'm not good with guns, I would be more than happy to go hunt this thing down. If this thing stole a young girl, it needs to die.
Now, you said, Dr. Dawkins, am I correct? You said that you saw the old woman drain the life from the girl. So she has murdered the girl, yes?
So yeah, I mean, if I'm the only one that remembers it, then yeah, I would have killed him. I would have killed him that.
This may tell us something else as well. You see, the legend is confused as to whether there is one Baba Yaga or there are 3 Baba Yaga. And if there are 3, then there is 1 young one, 1 old one, and 1 in the middle. Which may mean that there is another one out there.
You're saying that Sirtza was a Baba Yaga?
I believe she may have been enlisted as a priestess by the oldest one. The oldest one is always the true form of Baba Yaga.
Okay.
And She has drawn the child's power to her to repair what you said. She was crushed. The only way to kill Baba Yaga is to kill all three, or the one if the other two are dead. But no one has ever succeeded in doing this since the beginning of time. So this is a mission that may prove to be destructive to all of us. But vengeance must have its say-so. We will make them pay for what they have done to us. You understand what last night's ritual was all about.
Well, I guess it was to keep the Baba Yaga away or to protect us as we go into the forest.
To keep the spirits of the woods at bay. We have performed this for thousands of years, and it has proven effective against these creatures. When the little girl goes into the house, she makes a certain sign as she passes the threshold, and this protects the villagers. They don't even understand. They are Christians, and they don't realize that there are some magics that are far older than Christianity.
So are you saying that the villagers have made frequent dealings with the Baba Yaga?
Well, if the Baba Yaga is the old grandmother, as you say, then yes, they have dealt with her, but they didn't know that she was the Baba Yaga.
Why didn't the Baba Yaga kill them? They wanted to kill us.
Because of the spells that we have placed on them. They have protected the village all this time. We didn't know what we were protecting them from, but they have prevented. This is probably, I can see it now. You are strangers. You do not benefit from the spells that we cast upon the houses of the villages. You are the only food that they could feed the thing, the brood mother. You are an opportunity to feed it. But the others in the village, they don't understand this. They welcome us into their homes to perform the spell. They would not be in league with this thing. Does this make sense to you?
I nod, and then I'm going to turn to my group. I'm going to relay all of this to them by saying they wish to hunt down the black goat. And they're wanting... I turn to Marco, was his name?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, do you wish us to come with you?
We would not ask you to do this unless you wish to do it. But I will tell you one thing at this point. Because you have brought us this information, because you have been witness to it, because it affects our village and this daughter of our village, we consider that you are now a member of our tribe. We are always and forever in your debt. Whether you help us to hunt the creature or not, you will always have a friend with us.
I nod, and then I'm going to turn back to the group, and I'm going to say, they'd like us to help them.
What do they think they can do? I mean, what?
Supposedly they've killed beasts like it before. This is just the biggest beast. If we kill this, there'll be essentially no more danger in the forest.
I must confess, I only have the vaguest inkling of what that thing was. What little of it I can remember, I don't like.
Well, and Dr. Elizabeth isn't exactly built for traipsing through the woods anymore.
Well, if Dr. Dawkins, or not Dr. Dawkins, Dr. Elizabeth, you don't want to pursue this. It's totally fine. In fact, none of you have to. But call it the culture, the shared culture between me and them. I shrug.
Can you repeat that? Call it the culture what?
Call it the culture that we share. I'm West Russian, and these are East Slavs. We share something, some kind of mythology.
Marco is talking to some of the others and giving them orders and getting them prepared. He turns to you and he says, listen. He says, you have a very hearty woman with you, but perhaps this is to the kind of danger that she does not need to go. This is the men's work. I want to give you something. Not a thing, but this here, this is my son, Alexander.
Oh, no, really, I couldn't.
No. No, we can arrange something like that if you want, but okay. He has a vehicle, a truck. It's over there. And he points to this old car that looks like it's a truck. It looks like it's been held together with baling wire. And he says, yeah, I know it doesn't look great, but it will hold together. He can take you as far as, what's the name of that town? He came through it.
Orshish?
No, he can't take you that far. He'll take you to Arendyelovich. And from there, you can take the train to Maladenovich, and then from there to Orashech, and then from there back to Belgrade.
Well, I think I'd be better just heading back to Orashech and waiting for the others at the hotel.
Yeah.
Although perhaps I should just wait here at the camp until you will return.
That may be a good idea.
She is welcome to stay here. You are all welcome. So we will be prepared in 20 minutes to go into the woods looking. And you can see them lighting torches and getting spears and pickaxes and shovels and anything else they can use to beat on or cut or slice up this thing, even some old sabers they have.
Well, in that case, I'm just going to quickly approach Dr. Dawkins. I'm just wondering. This isn't the arm that you had, is it?
Yeah, I look at it and I say, "This is the that looks like the arm from." The cottage, or from the
creek. This is the other arm.
Yes.
One of the gypsies that's standing there, that she got Sigani, they see you show the arm to Dr. Dawkins, and they suddenly call something up and make a strange sign at you. Okay, the sign of the evil eye, and it immediately starts to go around, and a few people have started, sort of pulled a little away from you. Marco's alerted, and he says, "What is this that you have here?" And you can tell that he's called for Lumanitsa, the wise woman, to come. And he says, "This looks like dark magic."
We are taking this object and other objects like it to a place in the east to destroy them.
About this time, Luminista appears, and she comes over, and she takes a look at it and makes a sign and spits on the ground, and she says, "This is an evil thing. This is something you should get rid of. You should throw it in the deepest ocean or down the deepest hole. It is a thing that will bring a curse upon you." And she won't look directly at it.
I'll slip it away inside my coat again.
And almost pleadingly, she urges you to get rid of it, wherever you can get rid of it.
I assure you, we will be rid of it. Okay. Eventually.
So how are you all going to proceed?
Oh, so what do you want to do?
Was there something you wanted to do, Eldridge?
Did you want to? Yeah, I nod and I say, we owe them something. We can't just leave with the item. We just can't leave. This thing is apparently wanting to breed more of the things that lived in the forest that killed their people. We need to help them, at least.
They have organized 15 of their strongest men to go.
How do you feel about problems?
Dr. Dawkins.
Yes, sir.
Do an idea roll.
An 0 and 9. Out of Vedic.
You remember so clearly that thing, the size of it, the violence of which it jerked itself around. You think that 15 men might not stand a chance against that thing.
Yeah, I will actually I'll ask Eldritch to try to convey to them the danger that's, you know, posed to them, basically. I'm trying to avoid a massacre of them.
Okay, I nod and I approach and I essentially give the description of it to Marco and I say 15 men may not stop this thing.
Well, we must try. We must do our best to try. It has murdered somebody from our village. It has stolen somebody from our village. We are obligated to try and destroy it. But there is something you should know. We are also very good at running away if things get out of hand.
I nod, and I turn to Dr. Dawkins and say, they're not going to just throw themselves at this thing. Things go wrong, they're going to flee.
All right. So, what are you guys going to do?
Here's the thing, or here's at least what I'm thinking. If Eldritch is really, like, if he's going to do it despite the danger, I don't want to let him go by himself, you know. I'm going to try to talk him out of it, but if he says he's going to go, then I think at least one of us should back him up. I mean, it may mean our death, but, and remember, we do have a more important thing to do. So, I don't know, but I'm more or less going to follow your lead, Eldritch. You feel strongly about this, and there's a reason that you're feeling strongly about this. I'll back you, but I'm just letting you know that one, we still have a mission. If something happens to us, then the Brotherhood of the Skin will get, you know, these pieces. They will put these things back together. There won't be anybody else to stop them. I mean, we do have a more important mission.
Okay, let's see.
Well, after you've said that, I can't help but wonder, Dr. Dawkins, whether If I'm remaining here at the camp, then perhaps... I don't know how we'll do this without attracting more of the attention of the locals, but perhaps I should take the other arm. Just so that if the worst does happen, one of us can carry on.
I'll hand it over to you. Frank?
Do it subtly.
Well, it's in a sack, so...
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Tom, I want to give you the choice. High or low?
You're giving me the choice. High. Yeah.
All right, I look to the group, and I say, I'm going. This way I can blame Tom if I die.
All right.
Now you have to blame yourself.
So, final question. Who's going on the hunting party?
Well,
Dr. Elizabeth is not.
Dr. Elizabeth is staying at the camp. She's
Rupert's probably
absolutely
yes.
Not up to it. Rupert is determined that he won't let his comrades down, even though you have previously accused his uncle of being in on the job with the cult of the...
I didn't say that. I just said that maybe there may be some interception. That's what I said. Yeah. That's what I suggested.
It's a sore point. Let's not dwell on it. You don't go around insulting a man's family.
I didn't insult his family. I just said there may be interception.
All right.
If anything, I said that his family was dead.
The one I haven't...
Rupert is cleaning his pistol.
The one I haven't heard from is Frank.
I'm struggling here. I'm looking around at the 15 guys, and I'm agreeing with Dr. Dawkins that we're going up against the dark arts.
You know what we should have in this game is something called a machismo roll.
Or a stupido roll.
I thought you could use POW as a willpower roll to
see whether you cave into
counter peer pressure.
That's true. Yeah. Well, I will be up front and say I will join you all. I will help as best I can, but if things go bad, I'm running.
I think we can all agree on that.
Is that?
Yep, that's understandable.
Okay.
Because I will be doing the exact same.
No heroes.
Yes, no heroes. We're going to help, and if we can't help, then...
All right.
Yeah.
I need you to decide, since Eldridge seems to be the one spearheading this, at least at the moment, of your group. I would like you, Eldridge, to do a track roll.
Okay. I got a 21. That's a pass.
Okay. I'll sum up. After a day of searching, well, first of all, you go back to where you started from, to where the hut was, and there's definitely blood in the snow, and there's things that have been scattered. All of the plant life, every last blade of plant life that was there before, is now crumbled into kind of a blackish gray powder. You also notice that the place where it was standing, where the hut was, it looks like there's actually a mosaic tile floor under the snow, or at least partly, like from some old Roman temple. There are depictions in the mosaics that are almost as horrible as the creature itself, depicting things. Perhaps there was a temple standing here at one time. Go ahead and do another track roll.
Track is a 30, so let's see. Nope, that's an 83.
Okay. So you and the others start to follow what seem to be tracks, large chicken tracks, leading out of the this area and into the woods. And very quickly, you lose track of them. The thing, whatever it is quite stealthy. And after a day of searching, you find nothing. Go ahead and do another track roll for me.
Another track roll. This was a 28 passed.
Is that a hard or a...
It's just a regular.
Just a regular. All right. You and the 15, you and your group and the 15, for the next whole day, you also start searching, but you don't find anything. And that evening, two of the men go missing in the group. And you're not sure what happened to them. But Marco says something that kind of terrifies you, especially Dr. Dawkins, that she might just be fucking with you at this point. That thing might be, they might be hunting you and intending on picking you guys off one by one in the middle of the night.
Is it possible to do a spot hidione?
Sure, what are you looking for?
Just anything out of the ordinary, like a giant house. A giant house on chicken legs.
The woods are just so thick, and this thing that you start to hear all sorts of legends about. The thing can move through the woods like as silently as a deer, and yet it's huge. Go ahead and do a spot hidden.
All right. I'm afraid that if I fail, I'm just like I'm gonna scan the tree line, and there's just gonna be a house on chicken legs with a top hat, and I'm gonna be like, "There's nothing out of the ordinary here." What is my spot hidden? 65. I got a 53. That's a pass.
Okay. Once again, you spend most of the third day looking. And somewhere around noon, three or four of the men decide that they're going to give up and go back to the village. So you're reduced down to about nine men at this point that are willing to continue. But so far, you found nothing.
Okay, so I'm going to look at Marco. And I'm going to say, perhaps we should head back to the village as well. We've already lost two, now four are leaving. 9 plus 3, 12 people isn't going to do much against this thing.
Well, it causes some dissension amongst them because they do have a very strong machismo. We are going to kill that thing. It, you know, some of them are like that. Some of the others are like, you know, we should live another day because we're not going to find the damn thing. So the party starts to break up, and four guys want to go back, and you know, five of them want to keep going, and Marco finally makes a sort of an executive decision and says that they should go back, but they should keep a vigilant eye on the woods from now on and hope if they hear anything about its possible location that they're going to go and try and kill it. But in essence, 4 days have passed. So, Dr. Elizabeth, you are pretty worried that you've heard nothing in 4 days. But they come out, they eventually come out of the woods. Having lost two people.
Did you find it?
Nope. For a giant house on chicken legs, we did not find it. Very elusive.
Oh, goodness.
Well, Marco says, we are forever in your debt. You are always and forever members of our tribe.
I ask Marco, what is this symbol that you continue showing? My mother was East Russian, but I've never seen anything like this.
Well, he shows it to you. It's the ward against the evil eye. If there's evil there, that you make that so that it doesn't notice you. And they explain some of their rituals to you, some of their wards and their charms. But they're not like magic automatically. You really have to understand the whole philosophy, supposedly, for it to work. And it's not like they can just hand you this information and it works. Although there are things like that, of course. But things that you probably already know if you did an occult role. Wolfbane, scaring away werewolves, and and he explains. Luminica, the wise woman, explains that we don't always understand what we're talking about, but we know that they work. So
what
we might talk about werewolves, but there might not be anything like werewolves, but there's something there that's being driven back by the charms.
I look to Dr. Keith and I say, she has this black arm. You say it's evil.
Yes, and she says, I don't want to speak of that thing, whatever it is. But it is dark magic.
But how do we protect ourselves from it? We have a very important job of destroying it, but it takes us a while to get to the location we're going.
I do not know how to answer this. I only can feel that there is great evil in this object and that it should be destroyed or hidden away forever so that no one can ever find it. Drop it into the sea or smash it with something.
The hope is to destroy it where it was made.
Well, that kind of makes some sense if it is truly black magic.
If it's black magic, it needs to be destroyed in the location it was made?
That is one possible thing, yes. I do not know. I do not know what this thing is. Perhaps you could just hit it with a hammer and destroy it.
I think we've tried that, huh, boys? And I look to the group, and I do wonder, did we actually try to break it?
No, I think we have. We tried to destroy the Fez.
The characters in that book that you read.
We should definitely try and destroy these. Wondering the effects it may have. I bow. I thank everyone. And in Russian, I say, I may return.
Okay.
And I guess we take our leave.
By now also, I think that you've, after a few days, you've actually even picked up some of their language. You know, you can get by with asking them things in their language. A few little things, you know, where's the food, where's the bathroom?
I want apple.
Yeah.
We've probably
What's that called?
We've probably learned how to curse in Gypsy. Isn't that always... The first thing you learn from foreign languages.
Yeah, curse words. Those are the fun ones. You probably, from traipsing around in the woods, you understand attention. You know, keep your eyes open, look there. Watch out for that. All right. So, Alexandra is going to take you in the crazy old broken down truck back to Arandyelovich. Arandyelovich, the town. That's going to take about an hour or so, because the train was really slow. As it turns out, Alexander drives like a maniac. So you're all, Dr. Elizabeth is up in the cab with him, and the rest of you are holding on for dear life in the back of the truck.
With my stoic face, I look to Frank and Dawkins, and I say, you really think that Shep McGrath is more dangerous than this?
So, you arrive back in it's a hard one to say. Aranjelovich. I hope I'm saying that right. Anyways, you are there and you are told that you arrive there, let's say around 11 in the morning. You're told that the train is going to leave around 2:30 to take you back to Mladenovac, where you'll catch another train. So you have about an hour and a you have about 2 hours, 2.5 hours or so, to kill in Arandjelovac. Oh, okay, that's good. I'll just say, okay, you guys basically have lunch, okay, and you're getting used to these ethnic foods. Of course, Eldridge, you're already used to them, but you guys have sort of felt with the Chigani, with the gypsies, you felt kind of a sense of home that you haven't felt anywhere else on this trip. That these people were warm. Once you were in their village, once you were part of them, they were warm and they were friendly, and they tried to make you forget about your troubles by telling you jokes and making sure you were fed, and it was really, really nice. And you find also, as you're in Arandjelovac, that there's a kindness to these people that really sort of gets you right, you know, right in your heart. But as you are sitting there having lunch, and you are talking to some of these people, there suddenly comes a noise from down the street and around the corner. And it sounds almost at first like little children yelling. And as the curiosity sort of grabs you and some of the people who are nearby, and you look in that direction, four or five little children come running around a corner, and they're running now towards you, and they're yelling something. And just about the time Eldridge realizes what they're yelling, you see it. They're yelling, "The chickens, the chickens." And just about the time he says "the chickens," there must be 400 chickens, all black, that come running around the corner, chasing after the children. And it's just like a freaking wave of black chickens.
No!
And they're heading towards you guys. And they're flying up in people's faces and pecking them and scratching them. And it's the chicken attack.
I say they've come for me, and I run. I'm not kidding. I book it. I get all inside. Right.
All right, so you're gonna run inside. What do the rest of you do?
Rupert is holding his ground. He's turned his cane round the other way, and he's holding it out in front of him, much like a cricket bat, ready for action.
Okay. You notice that many of the villagers are terrified. Many of them are making the sign of the cross and trying to barricade themselves inside as well. This is obviously black magic. This is obviously something from, you know, this has never happened before, ever. It's like the movie The Birds, only with chickens.
I think we should follow Eldridge, personally.
Right.
That's pretty much what I'm doing.
Well, I'm going to try and drag Rupert. I've just created a bit of a situation for myself there. I'm going to try and drag Rupert along with me and say, look, this is no time for heroics, chicken-based heroics. This is something more than just chickens. This is something very odd. I don't think it's a very good idea to stand there and take them on.
Okay. You've now noticed a number of people being injured, some of them knocked down by these chickens, and the chickens are all doing their best to whatever chickens can do, peck and scratch. And of course, a lot of the males have the spurs on them, so they can do quite a bit of damage.
They can.
But after what amounts to maybe 2 minutes of this attack, and most of you are now barricaded, is that you've been grabbed by the villagers and they've pulled you inside. Some of the more adventurous men have gone out with their shotguns and they're starting to blow away whatever they can. And people with shovels and people with whatever they can begin to attack the birds and try to rescue the people that were knocked down. And after 15 minutes of this chaos, the street is pretty much bloodied with hundreds of dead chickens and people who are crying and upset, and they've been scratched, and one man's been blinded, and the children are, of course, absolutely terrified and screaming and crying.
There's a man who is now blind because of chickens?
Yeah, the chickens leaped up and tore his, his face.
God, this is horrifying!
But eventually it passes. And you guys want to have any discussions before your train comes?
I am now shaking. Paranoid, I say, what if it's the cult trying to stop us?
I'm quite silence, I'm at a loss for words.
Your silence tells me. Your silence tells me that you agree. And I stand there and I look at my pocket watch. And I'm thumping my foot. And I just say, "Where's the train?" And I'm rubbing my glasses. Does the train show up before more chickens?
Yeah, the train eventually shows up and takes you to the next town, which is Ladenovich. From there, you catch the train back to Oroshach. Now, when you arrive back in Oroshach, looks like it did a week ago when you left. And people are just going about their business, doing what they're doing. And nothing seems to be out of the ordinary. When you are noticed, Todor Nedic, the mayor, he comes over to greet you, but he doesn't really look happy. He comes over and he says, "My friends, you have come back." He says, "Something terrible has happened, and we don't understand what it is."
Can I interrupt you, sorry, Tom?
Yeah, sure.
During our train trip, I wanted to ask, I wasn't sure if Eldritch was suggesting this earlier. Are we under the impression that the townspeople set us up by sending us into the Baba Yaga hut?
I kind of asked them, and they said that the gypsies come in and they do their symbols, and then the people go in there and they're fine. So I don't think that it was deliberately a setup.
Okay.
But I'm going to guess they're now dead because we didn't help them. God damn it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, Tom.
All right. So Todor says, please come in, sit down. Have something to eat. He says, a few days ago, Father Vladim's wife. She suddenly collapsed to the floor, and according to him, he's in the church now saying his prayers, but he says that she fell to the floor, and within the space of a few moments, she shriveled up and turned to dust. He doesn't understand this, but he is in great mourning, because I believe he loved his wife very much, but we don't know what has happened. This is dark magic.
I look at Frank and Dawkins and Keith, and I say, should we tell them?
I think we should. Well, wait a minute. If we... I'll take you aside so that, you know, we're out of earshot. If we tell them and he decides to go after the old woman, he's going to die. And we would be to blame.
We should at least warn the mayor.
Yeah. Maybe we tell the mayor to have people stay clear from the old woman. I don't know if that will help much. I mean, especially if she's out for blood.
I say in Russian, could you please excuse us? And I wave over Frank and Keith, because now I kind of want to bring them into the conversation.
Of course, You have obviously been through quite an ordeal. You look all scratched up and stuff. We will have places for you to stay tonight if you wish. You could, in theory, catch the train from Orishach back to Belgrade. It'll be there like in 2 hours.
We shouldn't deny their hospitality, I say to the group. You know, they're being kind to us, and they're clearly in mourning, so we should assist in the grieving process and accept their hospitality. It'll just make them more upset if we don't.
Yes.
What was the thing that came up earlier? Were they telling you something, Eldritch, about there were three Baba Yagas, an old one, a young one, and a middle one?
That's why I said maybe we should tell them, because I'm going to guess that his wife was the second one.
I was thinking that too, and yet at the same time, if Ladin didn't know...
I just wanted to say
I feel like telling him now that his wife was a witch might be like too much if he's grieving for her loss, sort of thing.
Right.
Frequently have dealings with the grandmother, though. Wasn't she his?
Well, actually, I mean, it kind of makes sense. If the rituals that the gypsies do are supposed to push these spirits away, and every time they show up, she's upset, angry, you know, she goes off to her quote-unquote church. Not only that, but there was something in that house that reminded me of that the other night when I woke up in the middle of the night. I heard some sort of, like, talking. It sounded the same.
You heard three voices.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, yeah, that would make sense. Actually, how old was his wife?
Well, it suddenly dawns on you that she looked like she was maybe in her mid-30s.
I see. So it's like the mother maiden crone.
But she didn't look that different than when you saw the picture of Father Vladim and his wife at their wedding with Professor Milovich or whatever his name was. She hadn't aged in 20 or 30 years. Not much. You thought maybe she was just well preserved, but now you're thinking the girl didn't age.
Neither did the crone.
Well, she aged slowly, but they all aged slowly. All right.
Is there a benefit to telling him? You know what I mean? Like, I just
think that maybe if they know, they can work with the gypsies and make the towns, this string of towns, safer. They're all bordering on the forest.
Eldridge, do an idea roll.
Okay, I can do that. 58. That's a pass.
Okay. Psychologically, you're dealing now with a village full of Christians that think all of that is black magic stuff, that it's of the devil. But as primitive as the gypsies are, these villagers, even though you're in a little town called Oroshach, they're still a few levels above that. They're probably not going to believe a word of what you're saying. They're probably just going to say, yeah, all old people are witches.
All right. Well, then I say we just spend the night, enjoy their hospitality for one more night, and then head back to Belgrade.
And there is a train in the morning. All right. So I'll say that you spend the night. Now, none of you are comfortable. The more you remembered initially of the encounter, the more restless is your sleep. You're not going to sleep well at all. Dr. Dawkins especially. You can, every time you close your eyes, you relive that whole monstrous thing. And it seems like a bad dream. But it's, you know that it's not a bad dream, and that's what encroaches. So you don't get a good night's sleep. But nothing happens, except your paranoia level is through the roof. You are sure somebody's peeking at you through the window. You have to get up and look. There's nobody there. But is that somebody across the street looking towards your house? That, you know, it's one thing after another, and you have to convince yourself that you're just being paranoid, but maybe you're not being paranoid. And nothing actually happens, but you can't get past the fact that the chicken was watching you when you were in the train. Something has been watching you all this time that you've been in this part of the country. So, let us say that the train comes, you gather your belongings, you say your goodbyes to everyone, and you head back to Belgrade. After a few hours, you arrive back in Belgrade. And from there, you get on the train on the Orient Express. You're back on the Orient Express. Finally, you're back in a world of luxury, one that you are used to, one that you have enjoyed since the beginning of this trip, regardless of the fact that some really rather horrible things have happened to you.
Well, if I may, now that we're back on the train, I would like to raise an observation. And it's something I was thinking about before, but since the encounter with the woman in the gypsy camp, it has become more apparent. We haven't just found these things. They're in every case when we've encountered these things or incidents in the books describing the history of these things, there have been other forces at work. And I think we have to accept that these pieces of the simulacrum are, I don't know what to call them, attractors, magnets for evil is the only word that really comes to mind. I think now that we have another one, we can expect more of this. This is going to be how things are until we destroy this thing. Whatever is attracted to this will only increase.
And, I agree.
I think that we... It's too late to even possibly consider turning back. That's not what I'm saying. But I can't help but get the feeling that not only are things attracted to it, but each step that we're taking, it seems more and more like people are following us. And I can't shake that feeling that something is following us or someone is watching us.
Are we being followed, or are we simply acting out someone else's script? It feels like we're just walking into these things at every step. Every step we take towards these pieces of the simulacra seems to take us further and further into something more and more terrifying, as though this is all being laid out before us in some way.
I had a thought when we were back in, oh my God, Milan? Is it Milan?
Way back then, the opera.
Not Milan then. Snowy place. Guys with the stuff coming out of their chest. Where I killed a man.
That was
so long. Only a few days.
I'm thinking.
Oh, the one where you followed the guy back to the apartment and
yeah, I expect him. Yep.
That was Trieste?
Trieste, that's what it was. I had a thought back in Trieste. After I you know, kind of shake my hands. And I say, when we were questioning one of the skinless cult members, he smiled at the... And I wrote this down. He smiled when I said, "Are you following us? And do you know who we are?" And he just smiled. And that's when we had the discussion of whether we should finish the job or just leave him here and call the cops. And I looked at Frank and I said, "I don't know if you remember that, but I do."
I do vaguely, yeah.
So,
wasn't it too, like, if I remember correctly, they weren't necessarily aware of us until that day? Is that kind of how I remember it, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Almost like, you know, we captured those guys, we tortured the one guy, we killed the one guy, and then, like, it was that point that we made it onto their radar.
Yeah. It's like, to me, it seems a little easy. Doesn't anyone else get that feeling?
Well, no, I stand by my previous suspicion that perhaps they are using us to put all these pieces together. I mean, it would make sense if they were aware of us and they were following us and they knew that we were after the pieces of the simulacrum. I mean, if I was in their position, I would just allow us to find the simulacrum and then take it all when the time came.
Because it makes sense to destroy it in the place that it was made, but also doesn't it make sense to remake it in the place it was made?
It does.
And if they know that, then we're simply putting it all together and taking it to them.
But how are they following us?
Well, we have the simulacrum.
Do you think that somehow they're magically in tune with it?
I think they must have some way of finding it. And if we operated under that assumption that they did have that means of finding it, then wouldn't it be reasonable to assume that the more pieces of it we gathered together, the stronger that signal, if you will, would be?
That does make sense. Like you brought up, it's magnets to these kinds of creatures. So what's stopping having... What happens when you have a whole lot of magnets and a piece of metal? One magnet is strong enough, but five? Like, all in the same place? And let's not forget, someone kept breaking into our trunks, searching through, and nothing was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Can I interrupt and ask a question? Where exactly are you all at this point?
I assume in a train car.
So you've gotten on the train, and the train is going. I should have explained that this morning is stormy, cold. It's freezing rain, unpleasant morning as you're leaving Belgrade. I would like you to all do a spot hidden roll.
Okay. And that is a pass.
I want to know who gets the highest roll.
Well,
okay. I got a 12.
Rupert got a 5. And
it's a regular.
Yeah. I think a 5 beats my 20.
So yeah, Rupert got a 5 and Elizabeth got a 61, so that's not okay.
Let's not count Rupert.
Okay.
Okay. So what did Frank get?
33.
Okay. So then I'm the highest.
Okay. So Rupert, as you're sitting there discussing this with them, you are also looking, you're talking, and you're occasionally looking out the window. And at this point, the train has gone, it's now in the countryside. You've left Belgrade. It's a long trip to Sofia. Hours, like 16 hours. The train is moving at a fairly decent clip. It's dark outside. It's stormy. There's occasional flashes of lightning. And in mid-sentence, as you're talking to Dr. Elizabeth, you look out the window. There's a flash of lightning. And in that moment, you swear off in the distance, highlighted against the blinding sky, you see a gigantic tree-like structure running on long, spindly legs, and there is an old woman standing on top of it, and they're going in the same direction that the train is going. And you visibly yell and jump.
All right, I let everyone know that she's following us.
What?
What?
I point and I point in the direction where I saw it. Or not, well, if it's running alongside the train, I can probably point it out, the location, and maybe they can spot it. But I'm going to keep my eyes trained on where it was.
Right. You figure it's not right next to the train. It's maybe half a mile away, and it was just cresting the top of a hill when the lightning flashed. Everyone do a luck roll and a spot hidden.
Well, no luck on my luck roll.
36 for the spot.
Spot anything.
Fail on the luck, but a 36 on the spot.
Okay. Did any of you pass both rolls?
Elizabeth passed both rolls. Okay. And Rupert failed both.
Okay. As you guys are all sort of pressing your faces up against the window, lightning flashes once again, and some of you might think that you saw something, but Dr. Elizabeth, you definitely see something. You definitely see exactly what he's talking about. It's like a huge spider, a huge weird-shaped spider way off in the distance, and it's running along in the direction that the train is going.
Oh, God, it's all come flooding back to me now.
Did you say spider?
Like a spider.
Not it's like her hut with the two chicken legs?
It's definitely like... It's like a giant piece of wood with all these little branches, and it's running along. Some of them might be looking like chicken legs, but it's using more than just two of them to travel at high speed. And you're sure it's the thing with the old woman riding on top of it.
I look to the group and I shout, "What do we do?"
I don't understand. This is too. Previously, whenever anything's happened, we've just got on the train and we've fled, and everything's been all right. Nothing's ever come after us before.
It's been our safe space.
Yeah, it's been our sanctuary. I mean,
go ahead and do another spot hidden now that you're all looking.
For what it's worth, Tom, I just rolled a sanity roll and I got 100.
Oh, cool. Yeah, everybody can do a sanity roll. 1d4.
Four, so that would be 4.
I got a 6. Yeah, I passed.
Okay. And then, like I say, do another spot hidden.
All of us or just the people who missed?
Everybody, because you're all just violently staring out the window now.
15, I passed.
I got an 18, so I passed.
All right.
19, I've made the spot hidden. And 15, so did Rupert.
There's more flashes of lightning. And as you are now, you all know where you're looking. You can see that there is a river. And your train is crossing the river. And you can see the thing, whatever it is, slow to a halt right on the edge of the river and stop. And then there's no more light. The flashes are gone. So you didn't see whether it. You don't think that it could get across the river unless it can swim, but it looked like it stopped. And now it's trailed off into the distance, and you can't see it anymore.
I know they say vampires can't cross running water, but I don't know.
Well, it looked like an insect, so maybe much like bugs, they avoid the water, they'll get stuck.
You can do an occult or a... I prefer a Cthulhu Mythos, if you pass Cthulhu Mythos.
Alright.
Give it a go.
Nope. 65. Nope.
Dr. Dawkins, you passed?
Yeah, 18.
30 out of 9. Nope.
Drawing on various mythologies and ideas, if the creature is attached to the earth, if it's the dark earth mother, if it's the black goat, it needs to constantly be touching the ground. So the river might actually provide a barrier that it can't cross.
Okay. That's
cool. At least that's you're hoping that it can't come after you. All right. So the train goes on. I would like, unless you guys have something you want to say to one another, that can't wait for tomorrow. I'm going to assume you all go to bed and get up the next morning for breakfast.
Well, I'll try to sleep.
Yeah, you have difficulty once again. Now you kind of wish that you could go back to the Dreamlands and dump something else into the Gulf of Nodens.
The only thing I wanted to add to that previous conversation about being followed and maybe we're following along a path is that it comes back again to Smythe and Beddoes being in on it. Because they're the one that has given us that sheet, which we've been following for all of our clues.
You know, and I look around and make sure that Rupert's not here. And I say, I've wanted to come back to that because, like I said, you know, Smythe was burned beyond recognition, and Smythe was already worried that something happened and that people were following him. Maybe Smythe isn't the one who we need to worry about. Maybe it's Beddoes. He has in fact been giving us all the information. We haven't really talked directly to Smythe.
Mm-hmm. We also learned that they've kind of been following us, and which means he's well enough to travel. So maybe we should try and set up a meeting.
But we have no way of contacting him.
Exactly.
Through the telegraph service.
But we don't know where they're going to be. I mean, we can technically leave a telegram at the last city or place that we're at, but they don't know to look for it.
But if they've been trailing us, and they know all our movements, and for goodness sake, don't let Rupert know I said this, but they know what we're after. They know where we're heading. They would be in the perfect position to inform the cult of our location. Were it not for the fact that we're still in the process of assembling the simulacrum, I would even wonder whether that truly was Smythe.
Yeah. He was burned beyond recognition. We have no idea if that was Smythe. He sounded like Smythe. But
we know
again,
we know that this cult has the presumably that they have this means of adopting the forms of other people. Now, as far as we know, that's related to the simulacrum, but they may have other means of doing such things.
Well, and some of them have the means of transforming into animals, and some of them, like in Milan, and it's just, we're dealing with things that we can't understand. And so, if after all of the things that we've seen, is it really that unlikely that Smythe and Beddoes have been compromised?
What if we have in some of the books that we've read, we have slowly encountered this idea, or one of the possibilities that we've encountered is the idea that one person may, over an enormous period of time, have been using certain, I'm loath to use the word magical, but let us say certain technologies, ancient technologies, to not only increase his life expectancy, but to adopt different identities. Surely it wouldn't be beyond his capabilities to adopt the identity of Smythe or Beddoes in order to facilitate his access to the simulacrum again.
that's right. The account in the Roman testimony that we found, he took a completely different form. We have no idea how he did that. Mm-hmm. Whether that be through the knife or through some sort of magical means or just possession in general, we have no idea. What if Smythe is the one we're looking for? This guy who I think all the books talked about him in some manner or form, about a guy that's been there since the beginning. I'm pretty sure that's what I read. Well, that's what we read in the Crusades and in the
there was something as well that they. When you went to see the fortune teller, she said there were three ahead of us. Well, that could relate to three more pieces of simulacrum. And then a man as old as time. That would seem to suggest that it is one person who has used this knowledge to stay alive for all this time. Does this then mean that I mean, does this mean that Tilius Corvus became the sorcerer in the other book, La Imaginata di Diablo? Or does it mean that something, this man, this thing, simply wore the form of Tilius Corvus?
That's something that we should talk about, because it says that the simulacrum is armor. It's armor that this that someone can wear. Maybe it, this. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's not armor at all. Maybe it's a vessel for black magic. Put it together, and it's not a suit of armor that one of us can wear. It's something that another thing can use to move around.
Yes.
But I don't know. We don't know who made it.
Yeah. Well, we know it's old.
Yeah, we know it's old, but we don't know how old. It wasn't mentioned in
exactly. That's one of the things I was thinking when we were even looking for the piece. We don't know from what time period. You know, we were having an estimate of the around the Crusades era, but it could be older than that.
What do you guys think is the relation? Okay. The first book we read was from the 1890s. Next is the Crusades, and the next is the Roman account. The 1890s, they were dealing with the cult of the Black Fez. That has nothing to. Does that have anything to do with the Skinless Cult? Was anything perhaps, in there related
perhaps
it, to?
Perhaps it's simply a different name for the same cult.
Maybe
it could all be the same cult.
Actually, if you guys would do an intelligence roll for your memory.
Yes, please. It has been a while. 15.
Pretty sure we were dealing with two different.
76. I still passed. But.
The Blood Red Fez story. The characters in that story consulted two different sources to try and locate this the the cult of the Blood Red Fez. One of them was the Frenchman, and the other one was the cult, the Brotherhood of the Skin.
All right, what was the name of the... I'm thinking it was a child at the time that was the leader of that cult, or the cult of the...
The leader of the of that cult was an older man.
And that doesn't fit.
No, I remember a child that had this sort of ageless stare.
Oh. That might have been the son of.
It may have been the son of, and Frank said that name was familiar to him.
But how?
I don't know.
I think I remember trying to piece together the timing on that, like the son and how old he would be as of today or something like that. I don't know exactly.
Let me interrupt for a moment. So can I assume that this is the next morning that you guys are having this discussion?
Yeah,
like
over
breakfast? All right. So you guys are having your discussion, and Rupert notices first. He's like, "Where's my fucking coffee?" You guys are all irritated, by the way, because you haven't slept well. And he's like, "Where's my fucking coffee?" And you begin right on the edge of your conscience to notice that, you know, there are a few other customers, passengers that are complaining about the service, which is unusual on the Orient Express. I would like one of you who's tired of listening to Rupert complain, go over and get him a cup of coffee, since the coffee pot's just right over there. And Rupert's kind of trapped. The way you guys are sitting, Rupert's trapped on the inside.
Elizabeth, you want to go get your...
Yes, I'll go and do it. Go on now.
All right.
I might as well.
So you go over to get the cup of coffee. I would like you to do a spot hidden roll.
Oh, seven.
Seven. All right. This is where we're going to leave it. As you're walking, you go over to get the cup of coffee, and you turn around and you're heading back to the booth where everybody is sitting. Now, two booths down, you've passed this by. Two booths down, there is a gentleman. He looks like he's in his late 40s, early 50s. He's dressed in a rather ill-fitting suit. Looks just offhanded, like an academic of some sort. He's sitting in his booth, and he has a number of things laid out on the table in front of him. At a glance, some of them look kind of old. He's got a notepad and he's making notes. He's doing what you would expect a professor or an archaeologist, you know, who's studying something and making notes. He's sitting there doing this. And as you're approaching, there's a couple of things on the table that look vaguely familiar. You're not sure why, but as you walk by him, you look down at his notes. Now he's taking his notes in, it almost seems like it's definitely Serbo-Croatian, Bulgarian. I don't know if there's really a difference. They're probably a sorry Bulgarian people. But you notice that there are lots of references in other languages as well as he's going there. And the first reference that you see is something that says, I'll spell it for you later, Jujeta idol. Okay. Which you don't know what that is. But as you are looking. I actually do one more spot hidden. You actually had a really good spot hidden. I'm not going to make you do it. Okay. You're looking, and down his list, there's something that says L'Immagine del Diavolo. And farther down still, you see the word Sedevkar. And that's, I think, where we're going to end it.
What?
On that bombshell.
All right. So our players included Thomas McKeon, Mick Swan, Jeff Wilkins, and Wayne Worthy, with myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We provide audio-only versions of our shows free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Patrons of our show can now enjoy recordings of our pre- and post-game conversations. So far, I've posted 2. Some of the funniest and most interesting stuff occurs before and after the show. If you'd like to become a patron, visit our Patreon account. Just $1 or $2 a month will help a lot. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all of the members of our gaming club, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.